Good morning. Well, we've reached the 10th step in our journey of ascent. And the psalm we're going to be looking at today is a psalm which is a real honest reflection of the psalmist's life. And more than likely, you're going to see your own life experiences reflected through his words today. Now, this psalm is a psalm which invites us to come before God honestly and open as we continue to persevere in our faith. Now, this psalm is also a psalm which asks us to look at the realities of the life that we live. We can use Psalm 129 to pray and to call out honestly before God. So, shall we read it? Let's go for it. Psalm 129, a song for pilgrims ascending to Jerusalem. From my earliest youth, my enemies have persecuted me. Let all Israel repeat this. From my earliest youth, my enemies have persecuted me, but they have never defeated me. My back is covered with cuts, as if a farmer has ploughed long furrows, but the Lord is good. He has cut me free from the ropes of the ungodly. May all who hate Jerusalem be turned back to shameful defeat. May they be as useless as grass on a rooftop, turning yellow when only half grown. Ignored by the harvester, despised by the binder, and may those who pass by refuse to give them this blessing. The Lord bless you. We bless you in the Lord's name. Now, we do well to remember that this type of poetry and the beauty of this type of writing is that it helps us put words and pictures to the human experience. Now, sometimes when we read these metaphors and pictures, it kind of gives us like this light bulb moment and we go, oh yeah, that is how I've always felt, but I've just never really known how to put words to that. Well, poetry does this. It gives us words to things that we can't otherwise express. It can give us a real sense of clarity, and it's kind of like looking at a picture that someone else has painted, but we see ourselves as the subject of that painting. Now, sometimes you might have also experienced this when you've sung a song that someone else has written. You are often kind of hit with this emotional response, and your heart recognises your own life experiences in the words of that song in that moment. Now, remember, this psalm would also have been a song that was sung. Now, that is the beautiful way that art can help us make sense of our experiences, and we get to feel the words much more deeply than if we were just studying them academically. Now, once this picture has been painted in our mind's eye, it means that we can remember it easier and we can carry it around with us and then think about it throughout the day and ponder it and from loads of different angles. It's a really great way of remembering things. But this psalm really did it for me. Once I read it, I began to picture the image, and then the image that it created, actually, it stopped me in my tracks. The visual image of Psalm 129 is so powerful. So let's begin to dig into Psalm 129 this morning. We're going to look at the first two verses. From my earliest youth, my enemies have persecuted me. Let all Israel repeat this. From my earliest youth, my enemies have persecuted me, but they have never defeated me. Now, the word persecuted here has been translated from a Hebrew word, which is sarar, and when we translate that, it means to bind up, tie up, or shut up, to hamper, oppress, or press down upon, press hard upon. Now, the picture that it is painting here is one of oppression and persecution. It talks about something that tries to bind us and shut us up so that we feel trapped. This bondage that it's talking about, it inhibits us from living the life that we were designed to live. It stops us from living the life of freedom that God created for us to live. And therefore we become stuck, we become silenced, and we're rendered ineffective. Now, not only does the psalm talk about this oppression and persecution, but it also points out from when it began. It says, from my earliest youth. And he repeats this phrase twice. And something I've learned is when something is repeated in the Bible, then there's a reason for it. There's an emphasis on what is said. Now, we also do this in songs all the time. We repeat something that when we want to emphasise the truth of it. And then when we do that, I don't know if you've noticed, but quite often that song will get stuck in your head and then you'll just can't stop singing it just throughout the day. And then it becomes really easy to remember, right? So repeating things like this works. Now, we cannot read and understand this psalm without actually having a look at the history of the nation of Israel. Now, all of Israel is actually invited to sing this psalm. It says, "Let all of Israel sing." Now, we learn through their history that God's people are tough. Their faith has not only survived in the summer and the spring months, but also through autumn and like really harsh winters too. In fact, from its earliest beginnings or its youth, the nation of Israel has been persecuted, oppressed, exiled and tortured. But, now the word "but" here is really important. It's known as a pivot word. It says, "But Israel can say confidently, they have never defeated me." Israel's story is certainly not just one of victory upon victory upon victory. In fact, it has been marked with struggle, both from external oppressors, but also from within. When we read about the story of Israel, we learn that they are their own worst enemies and they're constantly hardening their hearts towards God and they're choosing to turn away from him. They were continually unfaithful to him. James Montgomery Bryce says this: "The Jews are the longest enduring distinct ethnic people on the planet. They have been slandered, hated, persecuted, expelled, pursued, and murdered throughout their long existence, but they have survived intact." Derek Kinder says this about Psalm 129: "Whereas most nations tend to look back on what they have achieved, Israel reflects here on what she has survived." Now, no matter what the nation of Israel went through, God was faithful to them. And there was always like this remnant within Israel that still looked to God and continued to live for him. Now, Isaiah 53 in the Message talks of Jesus, and it says in verses 2-3, "The servant grew up before God, a scrawny seedling, a scrubby plant in a parched field. He was looked down upon and passed over, a man who suffered and knew pain firsthand." Now, reading this, you might ask the question, what could become of such a difficult beginning? Reading that about someone's life, you wouldn't really expect much from that type of start. But what do we read further in these verses? Well, the results are this in verses 10 to 11. He'll see life come from it. Life, life, and more life. Now, out of the terrible travail of the soul, he'll see that it's worth it and he'll be glad that he did. Jesus shows us a person of faith can endure and outlast the oppressors. Faith lasts. Now, this line in verse 1 in Psalm 129, "From my earliest youth, my enemies have persecuted me." That's repeated here in Psalm 129. And it's about oppression. Now, the oppression and binding has been happening from when the writer of the psalm was very young. Now, we can read this personally too. When I read this, I related immediately. I had this deep connection with the words. Now, from as early as I can remember, my story has been marred with shame, abuse, and this robbing of my innocence from a young age, from when I was about 5 years old, was one of my earliest memories. And it became a secret shame that I just couldn't share. In fact, I actually have no memory without carrying this shame. And so for me, it just seemed normal. The enemy tried to bind me up, tie me up, and shut me up from those very early days. And the cycle of secret keeping and shame became and showed itself time and time and time again in different ways. So often, when oppression happens, when you're young, it can become this ongoing cycle and your one oppressor can actually become many. Perhaps you can relate to this psalm too. Beth Moore says this: "Anything that we've continued to battle from our youth is habitual enough to require Christ's healing work. Only he can clarify our clouded belief systems. Otherwise, the cycle will never break. One oppressor, be it a self-destructive parent or a neighbourhood bully, with enough impact on our formative years can lead to a string of other oppressors." And we all find different ways of coping with oppression. We call this coping mechanisms. In fact, children with very similar upbringings and the same situation happening to them can all react in different ways. Now, my way of coping with my early oppression was silence. Just like the writer in this psalm says when he uses the Hebrew word sarar, I was shut up. The enemy bound me and kept me from speaking. And this is something that I just saw repeated all throughout my life, time and time again in other situations. Silence and secret keeping and an inability to speak out. But this cannot be pushed and shoved down forever. It eventually comes out whether you like it or not, and often it can be messy. Some people might find themselves dealing with addiction, eating disorders, outbursts of anger, substance abuse, perfectionism, like the list just goes on and on. Now, what could have become of my life? Was it ruined and just spoiled from that early age? Was that it just done? Well, things that happen to you when you are young have a way of repeating themselves in your life. But this psalm, it says, but they have never defeated me. God can break the chains of injustice in your life. He can break the chains of injustice that bind you. And he's done it for me. He has broken the chains that bound me and given me a voice that I can use to proclaim his freedom with. God rid me of the shame of my youth. God made us all to be free. Now, did the oppressors win? I'm not going to say that they didn't give a really good punch, but has Satan won the war? Well, the psalm and the lives of the saints that have gone before us tell us that he has not. If we move on to the next few verses, we engage our imagination and we can get a really vivid and graphic picture. In Psalm 129, verses 3 to 4, it says this: my back is covered with cuts, as if a farmer has ploughed long furrows. But the Lord is good. He has cut me from the ropes of the ungodly. Now, we live in a country that is full of fields and farms, so we know what these furrows look like. I just drove past a tractor furrowing a field the other day, actually. And we know that if we look at that part of the tractor, you know, that bit that's kind of like spiraling, it digs up the field, it looks super sharp and we're not going to want to get in its way. It's powerful. Now, what this psalm is really saying is, look, imagine one of those big tractors, or back in the day when this psalm was written, it would have been an oxen tied to a plough. Well, imagine one of them walking up and down your back, tearing up your flesh and making long furrows, just continually walking up and down, back and forth. That's going to be sore, right? Ouch. Well, when we think about this picture, we wince, but we know it to be true. When we experience oppression, it hurts. And it can be devastating. It could be literal physical pain, or it could be psychological pain, or it could very well be both. Now, we also can use like a similar phrase in today's times when we're talking about somebody who's abused or mistreated. We describe the abuser as walking all over them. Now, the Bible has something different to say about the ones walking on the backs of the ones who love and follow him. Isaiah 51, verses 22 to 23 says this: this is what the Sovereign Lord, your God and Defender, says. See, I have taken the terrible cup from your hands. You will drink no more of my fury. Instead, I will hand that cup to your tormentors, those who said, we will trample you into the dust and walk on our backs. Psalm 129 tells us what God, our defender, does. In verse 4, he says, he has cut me free from the ropes of the ungodly. In the Message version, it puts it like this: then God ripped the harness of the evil ploughman to shreds. He cuts the ropes between the oxen and the plough. So think about that, what would have done to the oppressor. It would make the plougher completely ineffective. The efforts of the persecutors stop working or having any impact. They are unaware and they continue just to keep walking up and down. They are putting a whole lot of effort and time in, but the reality is that God has rendered them completely useless. Now, this really disturbing picture that we've had of them tearing up our backs and our backs actually being ploughed almost actually becomes pretty funny. We picture the oppressors and they're still walking up and down, but they haven't noticed that they're not doing anything anymore, that it's not working anymore. Instead of our backs being torn, we actually can read of someone who allowed their backs to be torn for us. In Isaiah 53, verse 5, it tells us about Jesus. He was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins. He was beaten so we could be whole, was whipped so that we could be healed. John 19, verse 1 says this, then Pilate had Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip. See, the ground that was ploughed and ripped up in our lives is transformed by God and becomes a fertile ground where he can plant good things. The furrows that were meant for evil can produce good fruit. When we give ourselves to God, our oppression and our pain become a place where he can produce good things in our lives. God turns it around. Isaiah 61 verse 3 says, to all who mourn in Israel, he will give a crown of beauty for ashes, a joyous blessing instead of mourning, festive praise instead of despair. In their righteousness, they will be like great oaks that the Lord has planted for his glory. We can grow and we can become great oaks with deep roots who persevere in all seasons. Now, Psalm 129, it shifts a bit and the focus moves from the experience of the oppressed to their feelings about their oppressors. This passage may be for some of you a little bit of uncomfortable reading. Psalm 129 verse 5 says this, may all who hate Jerusalem be turned back into shameful defeat. In the Message translation, it actually puts it like this, oh, let all who hate Zion grovel in humiliation. Now this psalm is called an imprecatory psalm. There are psalms that call down judgment or curses on peoples and things, or people and things. I don't know about you, but I haven't always known what to kind of do with these types of psalms. I'm not going to write those ones down in your Christmas card, so I kind of sometimes just skip over them. But these words and sentiments that we read in this psalm, let's be honest, they're full of anger. The one who's been wronged is actually looking for vindication. Now that we know that as apprentices of Jesus, this isn't quite right. It's not what we're supposed to do, right? We cannot, in all honesty, say that this is not exactly how we have all felt at times. This is a thing about the Bible. It is real and it is authentic. Now, some of us may want to let the psalmist off the hook and say, well, this was pre-Sermon on the Mount time, so it was before Jesus ever said, turn the other cheek, but not so fast. We can't do that because the Old Testament includes verses like this, Leviticus 19, 16 to 18. Do not nurse hatred in your heart for any of your relatives. Confront people directly so you will not be held guilty for their sin. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against a fellow Israelite. Love your neighbour as yourself, for I am the Lord. Also includes Proverbs 24 verse 17. Do not rejoice when your enemies fall. Don't be happy when they stumble. All throughout the Bible, God is teaching us about this radical way to live. So what do we do with these angry words from Psalm 129? Well, Nahum M. Sarna says something that you might find helpful about the Psalms. He says, in the law and the prophets, God reaches out to man. The initiative is his, the message is his. He communicates, we receive. Our God-given free will allows us to be receptive, to be accepting, to turn a deaf ear, to reject. In the Psalms, human beings reach out to God. The initiative is human and the language is human. The biblical Psalms are essentially a record of the human quest for God. Hence the variety of forms in which the ancient psalmists expressed themselves, reflective of the diverse and changing moods that possess them as they do all human beings. In short, the Psalms constitute a revealing portrayal of the human condition. The beauty of this psalm is its honesty. When you are in extreme pain, you may well want to call down God's judgment on the people who are causing it in that moment. You know, we can learn through the psalms like this, that we can take these feelings to God. It's okay to be honest with God. We can tell him the truth about our feelings. In fact, he wants us to do so. Psalm 129 is a true reflection of the human condition, and it is better to take these things to God than to anywhere else. Interestingly, there are 18 psalms that are considered in precatory, and the author of most of them is King David. But however, when we actually look at David's life, he ironically was a person who lived a life with the opposite of a vindictive spirit. He often overcame evil with good. He took his anger to the right place and he was heard by God. Now, we must remember when we do it that we leave it there though. We read in Romans 12:19 that vengeance is God's right alone. It says, "Dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God." We shouldn't just explain away the writer's call for vindictiveness, as a person of faith should live a life that is different from the world's way. However, we can see that the writer is not apathetic, but he deeply opposes the unjust treatment and sin. This is anger that we've all experienced, and it's a sign that we really care about something. Now, when we were on a bike ride with our boys a few months ago, we were cycling and it was a track that's really, really safe and there's no cars that can get to the track, but the boys usually cycle ahead and then they stop and wait and then they cycle ahead and stop and wait. But this one time, one of our kids didn't stop and just turned around a corner and started cycling towards a busy road. And the road was down a hill, so it was hurtling really quickly down the hill. And it's one of those moments as a parent where you see it happening and it's terrifying. And a car just came around at the moment that he just got to the junction and it was a narrow miss. And we lost it. As parents, we started shouting and screaming at him, telling him how reckless he was, and it wasn't the best parenting moment. Now, screaming in anger may not have been the best approach to that situation, but we deeply love and care about our son. And if we had just kind of like shrugged our shoulders and went, "Ah, well," that would have almost been inhuman. Eugene Peterson says this: "The Psalms are not sung by perfect pilgrims. The pilgrims of old made their mistakes, just as we make ours. Perseverance does not mean perfection. It means that we just keep going. We do not quit when we find that we are not yet mature and that there is a long journey still before us." Now, to have this perseverance we are talking about here also does not mean that we just have to put up with the status quo. We just have to put up with stuff and offer ourselves as a doormat for people just to walk all over and just to use as they please, giving our backs freely to the oppressors. Well, I used to actually think that was the right thing to do. No, living as an apprentice to Jesus will mean learning how to live a life full of the Holy Spirit with patience and learning how to treat people as Jesus did, treat our oppressors as Jesus did. However, the way we do this is not by pretending that we are never angry and just burying our feelings. And it's not by shrugging our shoulders and saying, "Oh, well," and excusing all types of evil. But we find the key to how we grow in this psalm. We offer up our anger to God, who in turn teaches and guides us in a loving way of living. We need an outlet to pour out our honest and raw emotion and to be able to speak about our unjust treatment before a wise and loving God. Psalm 129 teaches us that God is always interested in relationship with us. He invites us to come to him honestly. And we learn in verse 4, God is good. Peterson said this: that he sticks with us is the reason that Christians can look back over a long life crisscrossed with cruelties, unannounced tragedies, unexpected setbacks, sufferings, disappointments, depressions. Look back across all that and see a road of blessing and make a song out of what we see. They've kicked me around ever since I was young, but they could never keep me down. The reality for us as apprentices of Jesus is that the perseverance that we're talking about here is not a result of just gritting our teeth and holding on by sheer willpower. That is not going to work. Instead, this perseverance is a result of God's faithfulness and commitment to us. He remains faithful to Israel even when they harden their hearts towards him. God sticks by us through it all. And because of that, we are able to persevere and keep going because he sticks by us. We in turn learn to stick by God. Hebrews 12 verses 1 to 2 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race that God set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith." Right now is a season of hardship, where we cannot live life together the way that we would like to. This is a time that we can persevere. Some of you might feel like you've just got to the end of yourself. I know that I myself have used this phrase even this week. I'm done. I'm done. I'm just done. I can't do it anymore. Now you might be also thinking that I just can't do it anymore. I just want to quit. I want to give up. He remains faithful to you. I would say to you today, just like when you're on a hill walk and you look ahead at the distance that you have to climb and you feel like, no, I just can't do that. I cannot go on. Take a moment and look back at where you've come from. And then take a moment and fix your eyes on Jesus and keep going. Press on. You too can say, along with the writer of this psalm, "They've kicked me around ever since I was young, but they could never keep me down." I want to finish today by reading a song, almost like a prayer for us to say together collectively as a church. Now, I'm going to read the song, but I want you to close your eyes and quieten your heart and make these words yours today as well, as we commit to pressing on towards the goal, to persevering, to keep going. Okay, just close your eyes. "Christ is my reward and all of my devotion. Now there's nothing in this world that could ever satisfy. Through every trial my soul will sing. No turning back, I've been set free. Christ is enough for me. Everything I need is in you. Everything I need. Christ, my all in all, the joy of my salvation. And this hope will never fail. Heaven is my home. Through every storm, my soul will sing. Jesus is here. To God be the glory. Christ is enough for me. Everything I need is in you. Everything I need. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back. The cross before me, the world behind me. No turning back. No turning back." Amen.